Hey everybody, welcome back, If you made it to today's podcast or today's radio show, I didn't scare you off the other week. It's cool. Hey, welcome back. I'm always going to welcome people that want to share great ideas and want to listen. It's your boy Bakari Finley on Can You Fit Me In Radio. I just want to congratulate you guys for making it through the weekend. And everybody out there who wished me a birthday, happy birthday, thank you very much. It was all that and then some. I really appreciate just the love. It's all good. So today, drum roll. We don't have a drum roll. Anyway, but today, we got a guest. We're going to have a guest later on today. I'm not going to tell you who the guest is yet. The guest is really important. And I'm just going to let them lay down their own thing when I get them on here after I lay down the first half of the show. So they're going to be on the second half of the show, so I just want to get you all excited and find out who that mystery guest is. Who do this dude know? Like, do this dude know anybody? Right, so I just want to talk about some stuff. So today's message, I want to talk about the lovers of you. And last week I talked about the wolf and dog. But today I want to talk about the lovers in you. The lovers of you. So something got me going this week. Something kind of like tag me. You know how you walk in and you know you think about something, then you see something, you're having a lot of deja vu, a lot of things are telling you in your mind that, hey, I've seen this before. This is appealing to me. I kind of know this. You know, I kind of know this place, right? So a lot of people ask me often, Kari, you know, you're a black guy in technology, you know, what's your experience like? A lot of young people ask me that. They've been having some problems, you know. Sometimes, regardless of race, they just have problems. I try to tell them that, hey, it's the nature of the beast. Innovation is in itself disruptive. In itself, it's not natural. Change is just natural, but it's not natural to people find things they like. You're talking to somebody that can eat the same thing for months, okay? Once I find something I like, I'm good. I don't need to be trying stuff, you know? But that's not how I am with technology. I'm not that way at all. I am like, okay, how can we add this to that and make this go there and make it work up? So I was talking to a young man and he was saying that, you know, I was applying for these jobs with all the major competitors like Apple and Facebook and whatever, you know? And like, they didn't pick me, but they picked some of my friends. So, you know, he said the only thing I could see in them that was different about them was, you know, I was black and they were white or Asian. So I kind of eased back while I was talking to him and I thought about it. And I said, before I say something, let me take a look at your resume. So I looked at his resume. It's a typical college, you know, kid's resume. It has a little this, little interns, you know, little dabble here, little dabble there and what have you, right? So I'm like, okay, what were you applying for? So he tells me what he was applying for, you know. Nothing deep. Help desk. Nothing major, you know. Then he told me he applied this other place for a program, you know, like a program and all these things. And then I said to him, you know what? Let me ask you something. What do you really want to do? What do you want to do? Do you want to work for somebody or do you want to work for yourself? He said, well, I need experience, you know. And then I looked at him and said, you're right. You need experience, right? I said, do you believe you can get that at Apple, Facebook, Amazon, you know, whoever? And he said, well, of course. They got all the stuff and all the things that I need to be, you know, successful, you know, technology person. So I said, that's true. But I know the best teacher in the world. He said, who's that? You know, this guy just graduated from a great school. You know, who's the best teacher in the world? I said, I know a teacher that's undefeated, never wrong, and always tells you the truth. He's like, Bakari, who are you talking about? Who? I said, life. The teacher of life. He said, life? I said, yes, my brother, you've been living in a bubble. You've been living in a nice bubble. And it does not mean you can't go work for Amazon, Facebook, and, you know, you name it, right? They would be lucky to have you, right? But you got to decide on what you want to do. You're telling them to fit you in to something that they're not interested in at this time. But does that mean you should not move forward? Right? So, basically, he got introduced to his first no's. And that's what this show is going to be about. It's about those first grinding no's. No matter male, female, black or white, those no's. No's add up. Say it with me. No's add up. And some no's are different from other no's. There's that definitive no. Like, no way. Never going to happen, you know. There's that H no. You know, that one too. That's one too. But there's that no that you just can't take. That casualty no. You know, it's that no that the no you get like when you like somebody really, really bad and they say no. Like, that's like the most fatal no. It's that no when you just know you're going to get the job and you need it. It's that no. But what you don't realize is God, all he does is tell us no. He tells us no. He's telling us no the moment something that we try to have does not happen. That's when he's telling you no. He's telling you no at that moment that Facebook, Amazon are not right for you at this moment in your life. Right? And you, my brother, have to figure out or decide or commit to the yeses. And that's the yeses in you. Everybody has a foundation and a pillar of no's and yeses in them. You got fundamental things that we cannot change. Fundamental, right? I got a buddy, he refused to work out. It's a fundamental thing. He will not change, right? Fundamental. It's fundamental, right? I got fundamental people that will not eat meat. It's fundamental. They just refuse to do it. They won't do it, you know? Nothing wrong with the health conscious. But then there are the yeses in you. The yeses are fundamental things that you gravitate towards all the time. All the time. Right? So I want to talk about the yeses in you and how when I first started out, I developed something that I ended up applying later. It was called walking virtually. Walking virtually. Like, Car, you making this up? No. It's real, real, real thing. I wrote a whole proposal on it and everything. And I submitted the proposal. You never guess to, right? I submitted the proposal to somebody famous. They famous now. I submitted it to their manager. So I never met them. But I got to the manager, and the manager talked to me. And he was talking back and forth. And I was trying to hire them to do a conference, and they wanted to help out. And I'll tell you who that person was. No big deal. Their actor, their name is Idris Elba. Right? Idris Elba. Idris Elba, if you ever read, he has an amazing story. Like, you just read his story, like how he worked and used to work for Ford Motor Company. My dad used to work for Ford Motor Company. I know all about it. You know, it's a real job. Became a DJ later. It's an amazing, amazing story. But anyway, I met his manager, Ronde, and I met him virtually. Back in the day before Idris was even famous, when Idris was just like, I think he had done The Wire, but he hadn't done nothing else, and I was going to hire him for a conference, and he was going to come and speak. He wanted to help. He wanted to do it. But he had a show or a movie he was working on, and it just wasn't working out. Idris has a show that he started over in England, and he was commuting back and forth between Atlanta and Chicago. I mean, Atlanta, I think, in England or New York. He was going back and forth, and his manager was trying to get it online. His manager, great dude, his name at the time, I don't know if he's still his manager, but his name was Ronda Garrett. Great guy, right? So anyway, it's one of his best friends too. So anyway, he says, I say, I'm knowing that they can't do it, right? So talking back and forth with Ronda, to this day, if I reach out to him, like out of the blue, he remembers my name. I don't know why, but we just, this is great communication. And then I asked him, I said, Ronda, I want to submit something. You know, I want Idris to consider something, this thing I wrote up called Walking Virtually. Basically, it's a concept around building yourself virtually, how you move and the things you do and building up yourself, and people can basically identify with you virtually, like the things you like, the places you go, some of the things you may do. And now in this world today, it's all coming to a realization. All this stuff is available when I meditate. I don't mean just typing in what you type. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about every purchase you make, every place you go, every time you use a technical device, be it pay, be it talk, you are building yourself virtually. It's a blueprint of who you are, a blueprint of endless metadata, the percentages versus the non-percentages that you do things, that you want things, right? So I told Ronde that, hey, this concept is what I wanted him to consider with Idris. It didn't work out. It wasn't because you may think, like he wasn't whatever, but the timing just wasn't right. So I kept it later on, and I started using it in consulting all the time. I start developing a process of identifying clients' needs virtually way ahead of just them letting them tell me what they wanted, right? I'm not that type of person. You know, you build a website, what are you supposed to do with the website? What are you trying to achieve? Blah, blah, that's standard, right? But at the same time, I'm looking at the market. I'm looking at the wave. I'm looking at you being the next Amazon, you being the next Hulu, you being the next NBA app. I'm looking at that, right? I want you to succeed where there was no opportunity for you before. So anyway, I submit this virtual concept, and a concept where I look around now with all this metadata and all this stuff is tagging you. You say to yourself, well, what exactly is he talking about? Where in the space is he going with it? You know what? Well, every moment that you get online, you know, you buy those J's, Jordans. Somebody hit me to that like some years ago, the kids renamed them. but they hip you to it, and you just like J's. Anyway, you get online, and I wanted some J's, and I go to the next page, and they keep following you, right? And that marketing keep following you. You're like, dang, I'm about to buy these J's. Even though you didn't want to buy them a minute ago, that's the virtual you. They're tracking, constantly tracking your wants, your desires, your impulses, and telling you things. Constantly being fed things, these things, right? But at the same time, I talked to this young man. I was trying to get out of him, and we did eventually get out of him. What's the yeses in him? See, yeses in you, people say, do your passion. They'll say that in a heartbeat. Do your passion. Sometimes your passion don't pay, right? And I'm kind of like, I don't know. I used to think, yeah, your passion may not pay. But I'm thinking, if you're finding the yeses in you, you're doing the things you need to do, you can find a way to make your passion pay. I know a sleep expert, okay? Her specialty is sleeping, and she has found a way to make that pay. She focuses on and learns about people's sleep patterns and the conditions that they sleep under, and determining to whole companies how they can be more efficient and they're sleeping, and they get more productivity out of everybody. You see what I'm saying? You can find your passion and make it pay. There's a group of guys right now with a company full-blown out there cleaning up the ocean. So everybody throwing junk in the ocean, they're pulling it all out. They made a whole company about it. Right? You have to be and find the yeses in you. So in order to do this, though, you have to go on a little journey with me. Quick journey. I won't bore you. Of course I won't. It's a quick journey. I want to talk to you about one of my favorite stories. Everybody knows Obakari is a storyteller. He'll tell a story. But, you know, if I'm feeling like it's a good story, right? The story I want to talk to you all about this week is the scorpion and the frog. Some people may know the story, but I guarantee you don't know it like I know it, the way I'm going to tell it. Unless you heard me tell it before. And I'll probably change it like 5 times. But anyway, the story of the scorpion and frog goes like this. There's a scorpion. He's walking along the beach by a lake, you know. And he had to get across. His family was on the other side. And he walked up to this frog. He said, hey, Mr. Frog, you know, can you help me get to the other side? I see you helping out a whole lot of other animals and insects and, you know, would you mind helping me across? The frog said, hold up, dude. I'm a frog, right? It's not a train. But anyway, I do help other insects and other people across. But you a scorpion, man. Why would I help you? You know, we gonna get out there, you gonna kill me. You know? The scorpion says, that makes no sense, Mr. Frog. What? I mean, that makes no sense. I'm always running into discrimination. You know, people won't give me a chance. I am not like every scorpion. I am different. I am my own me. You know, I just think that if I need help, I should ask. And I'm asking you for help. Frog looked at him and said, you're right. I shouldn't be judging you like you all scorpions. No scorpion ever before came up to me asking for help. So you already different like that, so I'm gonna help you across. So they go across. So they're going across the ocean and they get to this, part where the scorpion says, oh, this is amazing. This is unbelievable. I'm enjoying this whole situation. Like, wow. I never knew that there was so many animals, so many things that are just popping up around here. How can this, you know, I didn't know nobody lived like this. And the frog said, yeah, of course there are things that are like this. Of course there are situations that are different like this. You're welcome to enjoy life with us. You are welcome to engage with us. And the frog said, I can't believe you're going to allow me to. I mean, where the scorpion said, I can't believe you're going to allow me to do this. And the frog just said, yeah, you know, you are allowed. Enjoy. So they had a great conversation. They get to the middle of the ocean and they look at everything. And the scorpion says, hey, would you mind like doing a 360? You know, so I could take it all in. I want to see it all. Frog said, no problem. He did a little 360. And he stopped. And then the frog said, ow! Scorpion said, what's wrong? He said, ow. Scorpion said, what's wrong? Something's poked me. Did you just poke me on accident? Scorpion said, no. I didn't poke you on accident. What are you talking about? Frog said, well, you poked me because it hurt. And the scorpion says, I didn't poke you on accident. I poked you on purpose. And the frog stopped and said, why would you poke me on purpose? You have venom. I'm going to die, and you're going to die, and we're going to drown. Scorpion climbed off the frog's back, got in the water with him, swam around to the front of the frog, and said, looked him dead in the eye, and said, I'm a scorpion, and you knew what I was before you let me on your back. So why are you surprised that I stung you? I'm a scorpion. That's the story, guys. Deal with it. Everybody knows them scorpions. Everybody knows those scorpions that you're helping, you're trying to carry, and those are the ones telling you can't have your tech business. Those are the ones saying to you, you got an app like that. Or those are the ones that won't help you. Those are the ones that are telling you, no way that can happen. Those are the ones. Right? And they also are the nose building up in you. The nose building. That's what they are. They're the nose building up with you. That's what they are. Right? They're building up. They're building up. And they build up. They build up and it's like, psh, this sucks. Right? This sucks. They're building up. It's just horrible. So, I want you take a page out of my grandfather, who was a Kris Kringle looking kind of man, a different man. He, when I was young, he bought all his buildings on the west side of Chicago. He bought them himself from his boss. And he's the one that told me that you are your own company. You are your own business. So if another organization won't allow you to to participate in this business. What is stopping you, my friend, from starting your own? You. It's the no's in you that's stopping you. And you the only one that got the key in the door to kick the no's out. I want everybody listening to this, to get rid of those scorpions. And you're going to see a change. You're going to see that Obama change. You're going to see that Harriet Tubman change. You're going to see that PayPal change, okay? You're going to see that Jay-Z change. You're going to see that presidential change, that transformational change. Because once you get rid of all the scorpions, guess what? It's nobody to sting you in your back. We'll be right back, and I hope y'all having a good time. Keep it going. Take care.
For stylists, their time is their money. Stylists and barbers are looking to make better management of their time. Perhaps they're looking to sell things like booth space or find better hair care products or even new clients fast. You see, clients, stylists, distributors, manufacturers are looking for less uncertainty in their daily schedule with each other. Well, uncertainty just met certainty. Can You Fit Me In is a cutting-edge platform designed to help the beauty industry connect in real time. With Can You Fit Me In, everyone can choose to reschedule or cascade schedule their appointments based on alerts when anyone is running late. So when you know, everyone can know. And we didn't stop there. Can You Fit Me In also helps stylists or barbers to bypass overpriced product stores and order direct from a master distributors or manufacturers, allowing them to have quality products at cheaper prices. They can even order products and have them delivered on demand with Uber. I know, wow, right? Got vacant booth space? We got you. We help you buy and sell direct to salon or stylist. So what do you say? Can we fit you in? Visit canyoufitmein.com to get started.
Hello.
Coming back for the second half. Hello. Let me. Sorry about this, guys. I told you about that mystery guest, but we got a hold of her. The government let her go a little while, or defense contractor let her go. This is Dr. Rashara Given. She's a manager at Boeing Defense Conference. She's making America great again, y'all. She's keeping us safe. She's one of the later hidden figures. She used to work for NASA, Lucent Technologies. I told y'all I know some people. Okay, I know a couple people. So she's going to be one of the people on the show, and she's just going to tell us a little about her career and her experience. And we're going to ask her some questions here and there, and ask her some questions about how it is to be a woman in a predominantly male world. But I want to first represent this, or pre-represent this, and tell you guys, Dr. Rashara is one of the smartest women I know. She's one of the smartest people I know next to myself. And she's a little smarter than me. She got a couple more degrees. She got one more degree than me, but that's not what makes her smarter. What makes her smarter is she is just a visionary person. She has a couple books out, or one book or two books, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm going to let her talk a little about herself. I'm going to ask her some questions. We're going to get in here. Go ahead, Dr. Rashara. Introduce yourself to the world.
Good afternoon, everyone. Evening, whatever time of day you are, where you are. I am Dr. Rashara Nichelle Gavon. I have a PhD in engineering management. And yes, I have a few degrees. I have a bachelor's in electrical engineering, a master's in electrical engineering, a master's in business, and the PhD. And actually, I've written and published 3 books, and I am currently writing 5 on the side in my spare time. So I spend a lot of time thinking, imagining, and writing stuff down that I think will be in the next phase of things to come, technology-wise, and then in business as well. Some of the things you probably don't know about me, a lot of people don't know that one of the first things that I created in undergraduate school was a digital interface for your bathroom that actually controlled the water valves of your shower, and your hot water heater, so you can control the temperature of your water.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, oh, that was one of my first. And that was back in 1990.
I want to thank you.
It was one of the pre things that was created that you kind of see in Siri and everything now with technical houses and things of that nature, software to control houses. It was some of the basis of that discovery, in addition to me creating a 4 gigahertz microprocessor while I was in college. That was in the 90s, but now everybody has access to 4 gigahertz in regard to telecommunication. But that design was actually done for NASA back then.
Is that what you did at NASA?
That was part of my research projects with NASA, but not exactly what I did at NASA.
When you were at NASA, were you like, were there many African-American women at NASA about the time you went there in the 90s?
There were a few. There were very few. And I had relationships with the ones that I met. And one of them actually became my career mentor, which is Dr. Amanda Goodson. She's actually a vice president at Raytheon today. But yeah, there were a few. And they talked
about Raytheon is a defense contractor.
Correct.
So if everybody know that Raytheon is out there making America great again too. So then you moved on to like Lucent. What'd you do at Lucent?
At Lucent, I worked in telecommunications. So there, I created a functionality for number portability. So what is number portability? It's what you have today, where you can take your telephone, your house telephone, wherever you need to take it. Your number follows you around the nation, versus you getting a new number every time you move.
So so they're just selling that now, like, you know, like it's like everywhere now, like the infinity, right? That was you. Take the credit. That was a black lady, y'all. Black lady created that. Incredible. Golly, incredible. And now at Boeing, you're at Boeing now. Now you got a top plan, so I'm sure you can't talk about what you're working on, but you can tell us something broad that you've been a part of at Boeing.
I've been a part of a number of programs, defense programs at Boeing. I've been a part of the infrastructure. I've been a part of at least at this point, 17 different programs within Boeing in the last 15 years. So I've moved around a lot, and I've done more program management type of things rather than actual design and development on a technology and things of that nature, where I worked on some things too. I can't say I did in regard to the architecture of the infrastructure, but for the most part, it's been more of a managing budgets of $26 to $56 million, trying to save the company money in the execution of programs.
Okay, so in the first half of the show, you weren't around for the first half of the show. I told the audience that you were going to be coming. I wanted to surprise them. They don't think I know any celebrity tech people, so I just wanted to surprise them. But I say that to say that we were talking about, I talked to the audience about scorpions. You ever heard of the story of the scorpion and the frog?
Nope, can't say that I have.
Okay, well, you can listen to the podcast and you can get it on the other end. But the point being is, I talked to people basically about how when you're kind of coming up and you want to develop yourself in the tech world and being a minority of any sort, sometimes the first thing you got to get rid of is the people that really aren't helping you, the people that aren't really for you, the people that aren't really supporting you. And sometimes you try to help people along, but they're bringing you down. So I talked to them about that, because in the world of technology, it's so ever-evolving. I'm sure in a structured area like you are, there is sometimes a partisan or a good old boy network, even, which sometimes doesn't allow you to do the things that you want to do. And I just talked to the people out there with technology, to let them know that, hey, through technology, we can find our independence, be that structured or not. Have you ever had examples where you were limited? You don't have to name the organization, of course, but where you were limited, you thought in your process, because for you to decide to be an engineer, which is a predominantly male network, you had to be better than most, say the least. So how do you tackle that, like in that environment, you know, because I could imagine, and I don't know, but I can imagine that there's a lot of situations where some men may not listen and some men may listen, but how do you just approach a problem when they're talking about technology, they don't think you know enough. They just think you're good on paper. Like we say, she good on wax.
But, you know what, that happens so often, and it's funny to me. It's hilariously entertaining because I can tell you when I first started, I was scared to death. I didn't think I was smart enough because of being in NASA, and I had smart people just surrounding me. I just didn't feel like I knew enough to be in that environment. Personally, I was very insecure about it, but I had a really good mentor, Dr. Amanda Goodson, who really shepherded me through the process to help me understand the communication and how I needed to present myself and how I needed to really relate to the guys that I was working with, because the majority of them were over 50 and all white guys. And
oh wow,
it really was a complex environment because I was nothing like what they were accustomed to. And every day they challenged me. They definitely challenged me to know more, to learn more, to communicate more. But I can say I had support there, and that they really would threw me into the deep end of the pool when it came to learning the technology. Because I worked on space station and Mars Observer, and I had to understand what was going on technically with those systems in order to add value to what the end item products were. And they didn't stop to help me. No. So what I did.
What happened to Hidden Figures is real. Like, it's real. Seeing a Hidden Figures.
It's real.
But she wanted to get coffee. And she had to get coffee to go to the bathroom, I think. And they were like, not helping her.
Right.
That's like real.
The bathrooms are now in the same building specifically. The bathrooms and stuff.
Oh, yeah, same building. People. Yeah, you're right.
But it's more or less around you get more discrimination, more so around concepts and ideas in regard to solving technical problems. That there is a thought that you don't understand what's happening within the system in order to make an intelligent idea come out of your mouth. And so they challenged me in that, which really drove me to do something else. I ended up pushing myself to.
And we're back. Dr. Rashara, she's was telling us about her experiences at NASA. The question was, she was following up was, did she see a lot of diversity in NASA when she was there? So you could pick it up there, Dr. Rashara.
Yeah, actually, no, I didn't. I expected to see more white women, but that was not the case, at least not at my site. And most of what I saw that worked primarily with me were white males, of course. And I kind of reached out of my circle to meet other African-American women and African-American males that were on campus at the center. But it wasn't that like there was a lot of diversity at all. And when I say there was diversity of younger folks, I think I was the youngest person in my office, in my area, and that's about all there was in that area. That's all there was, is me. And so I had to reach out and really find other people my age in their 20s, in their early 20s, that were even in the city or even on the center campus.
That had to be pretty, not just overwhelming, but I mean, just the elite of the elite and the best of the best to be selected for such a thing. And I guess at one point you were truly excited on another level. I'm looking at like, when did you decide and you knew that you were supposed to be there? What was the moment? Like, I had moments in my career where it clicked.
It took about 6 months. The first orientation was really quite interesting in that they taught you how to shake hands. They taught you what was expected of you in attire and all these different things as a new employer in the orientation and a college student, being a college graduate, what that meant. And no, my first few months, I did not feel like I belonged at all. Because the difference between what I did a co-op. I didn't do an internship. I did a co-op.
Okay.
And that meant I was there for almost 6 months working.
Right.
I was there from January all the way to August, where generally for internships, you're kind of just there for the summer. No, I was there for the entire, I was in there for a good 6 or 7 months. So it took me a minute to get myself comfortable. And then I built the relationships, after I finished school, I came back. So it took a little bit of a minute because it was overwhelming. I'm working with rocket scientists. Oh my God. I'm working
right,
at NASA. Right, with some of the smartest people in the world, and creating the next level of technology in places that I didn't even realize. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a constant moment. I think it's an aha moment when you realize that you belong to a elite spot in a major situation. I think it's an aha moment. So I think that's pretty much beyond the definition of wow. I've been saying wow a lot, but beyond the definition of what have you. I think I experienced that when I went to Tuskegee University, because I left Grambling State, and when I went to Tuskegee, I just saw all these great people. You know, we go to the Booker T. Washington, George Washington Carver Museum, you just hear about all these great people, and I wonder how I ended up there. I tested into it, but an aha moment where I decided that, hey, I'm going to graduate and I'm around the next super soaker inventor or the next web. But I will say something like this. All the people I knew, even at Tuskegee, those engineers, the engineering building stayed open 24 hours a day.
That's exactly how it goes. It never closes. The computer lab is open 24 hours a day.
Because
you're constantly working, studying, got to do what you got to do.
You got to do what you got to do. We go to the top of the hour, and we're going to go on break, and we'll be our last break, and we'll be right back. Thank you very much. I'll talk to you soon. And we're back.
Dr. Rashard has limited time, so we just want to close out here and ask her one other question. What are you working on next? Plug it. Go for it.
The one thing I am revising one of my books, and I plan on having a book signing in the fall to republish that book, Finding Function and Dysfunction, which is about business development and organizational dysfunction. And in addition to that, I'm working on an app with my friend Bakari here on the other line. Can you fit me in? I'm trying to get it to where we can use that platform for a number of other areas and diversify it as much as possible.
I did not tell you guys. Dr. Rashard is on our team, definitely, because I could not do it alone. If I could do it alone, still wouldn't have been able to do it alone. She has talked me out of some crazy stuff, guys. Some crazy things. If it was up to me, boy, you guys would be looking at androids right now. You know, that's the way I was rolling. I was rolling pretty far left. But some of this thing has come to pass. And the funny thing is, sometimes when I see stuff, my version of the thing I was talking about walking virtually, I was watching the Avengers, and now when I see the AI talking to Iron Man, you know, he's talking to her, he calls her, I forget their name, what he calls them, but the AI he talks to run everything, that was my idea. Like, I wanted to have that, you know, where basically your artificial intelligence travels with you everywhere you go, and it just does things for you on command. So if you're in your car, it does it. If you're in your house, it does it. You know, we have Alexa now and some other things, but mine was a little bit more involved. So,
without my work back in 1994, you wouldn't even have all that stuff.
No, that's right. That's right. Without her work, we would be would having. You know who made the memes? Who made the memes? Who made those GIFs? That was a doctor too. That was a black lady too. I would get up on that. I was like, wow. You know, the fun stuff. Yeah. The fun thing.
It's so funny when you go back to read the documentation that I wrote. People were like, why would anybody want to do that? Why would anybody want to dial the actual, because I had sensors on everything and everything sending signals back to the keypad, back to the valves and stuff. And you're like, why would anybody want to do that? Dude, once you do that, then you can do the whole house. That was part of my selling summary of my documentation.
You know, I was saying to the audience the other day, or earlier in our show, I was like, sometimes genius likes to be alone. Sometimes genius does not like to be around people that are good or okay. Sometimes genius does not like being challenged, you know, and sometimes genius does not like to be bothered, you know. So sometimes it's hard to convey that to people, but sometimes the best inventions also are the most practical inventions, not just the fun inventions. And we have to understand that we have a lot of technology in our community, and if we just erase and learn how to learn the technical processes, we could really crank out a lot of stuff. We've invented a lot of things. Technology has no limit. Our opportunity is no limit, but we have to basically start partnering with one another, supporting one another to get these things done.
Definitely. Definitely. So many of our day-to-day inventions came out of ideas from Black people. Although even from the cell phone, all of these things, Lattimore, from the actual telephone itself, all of those things were contributed to by Black engineers, Black people.
Yeah.
With the smarts and the intelligence to understand what needed to happen.
Including the Super Soaker. Yeah.
Included. You know what? I met the guy who created the Super Soaker while I was on vacation.
And Tuskegee graduate. That's us.
We were talking about all the things he does and stuff. And it was exciting because you can always bounce great ideas off of each other. Like, yeah, you know, I was thinking about this might be something cool to do in regard to not only the house or the car or whatever, maybe going on in your world that you want to just make it easier for yourself. Now, I do realize, too, that technology has made people dumb.
Yeah, because I can't remember nobody's phone number. I don't know nobody's phone number. I barely know my phone number. I'd be like, what's my phone number? I have no idea.
It has eaten up some brain cells, but it does, you know, it's an exciting transformation into the next level of this world and what it'll be like from transportation to actual communication. Everything associated with our daily lives is going to evolve to this next stage of people. I don't know if people are ready for it yet.
Well, that's okay. Our job is to educate and innovate, let everybody else catch up on their date. So I'm going to wrap it up here. I want to thank Dr. Rashard for her time and her patience. You know, technology is always unforgiving, but the logic is here. And I want to thank my audience every day. I want to thank you for your time. And as usual, I always want to thank you guys for fitting me in. Take care.
Thanks.
And we're back. I want to close out the show with something that what's going on with me today. Earlier this week. I want to discuss how has it become okay to be stupid or ignorant? And when I say stupid or ignorant, there's a difference. Someone being stupid is someone with the inability to not want to learn something. And somebody being ignorant of something is somebody that just doesn't know. So why is it okay in society when we're trying to move forward in the world of business and education, which most of this show is really about, technology or just in life, why is it okay to be ignorant or stupid? Why can people say stupid or ignorant things around people that know it's not true and no one say nothing? It shouldn't be okay. It should not be okay. And it's the same thing when someone tells you that you can't learn technology or you can't learn finance or you can't learn anything. Now, the difference is, do you have the patience to want to learn? Do you want to put in the time and effort to learn? Because in a world of social media where we judge by how many followers we have, and basically you deem the success if you have some type of social media page with 100,000 or a million followers, you deemed a success. But I say, no, you're not a success unless you can monetize that following. And the monetization of a following has to do, basically, can you convert those followers into benefiting you financially or powerfully some way where you become influencers over them? Because there's a lot of people with social media pages that's out there just naked on them, you know, and they got 100,000 followers, but they haven't monetized. And then there's people actually talking about stuff, you know, with some 100,000 followers, and they're monetizing it perhaps through ads and stuff like that. Or there's a comedian out there that's telling jokes and he's doing through entertainment, he's doing shows. So that's what I'm talking about when I say know your value, right? When you know your value, you can monetize it in a space that is different. When you're trying to achieve whatever your overall goal is in life, I want you to bring the energy to your business, the same energy you get up every day and go to work with. I need you to bring that same energy to your process. I was talking this evening about cryptocurrency to someone, and they're from a school where they don't value cryptocurrency. It's not that I don't think they really don't understand it totally. They don't care about it, you know, because they can't follow, they can't follow the value in it at this point. It kind of reminds me of a conversation years ago when I was younger and I was talking to someone and I was talking about rap and how they told me that it was a fad. We all are in our own bubble, in our own processes, but each opinion has a certain level of value. And if we take from that point of view that, okay, I'm just not into it, I'm not going to learn about it, that's fine. That makes total sense. But if we want to learn about something and get investigating new, we shouldn't be scared to voice our opinion, to learn and pass on information. So one day, maybe that information can help that person that maybe devalued it at the moment. I am a victim myself of my own bubble. I had a friend years ago that worked for a company called Worldpay. Worldpay is one of the biggest payment processors in the world. And I was part of the tech incubator before I went to the IBM incubator. And in this Worldpay incubator, there was a guy who got the first
Bitcoin crypto ATM in the United States. He got the first one. And he was working for this merchant processing company. And a buddy of mine was his good friend, and he sat across from him. And he was trying to explain to us, listen, back then, Bitcoin was like 13 cents a coin. Okay, it was super cheap. He's trying to tell us that, hey, you need to buy some of this cryptocurrency. And we couldn't wrap our minds around it. Even though my buddy was in merchant processing, we was like, okay, so we buy this for what? You know, what are we going to do with our money? Like, how does it gain value? But we really, it really is not all the information that's out now. It wasn't available like it is then. So, but the truth is, we were ignorant. He and I were doing our own thing. I was building my software, and I wanted to process money through it. So that's why I was there. And he was an engineer, and his job was connecting people with that money. And the other guy was talking about investing in something that was foreign us when we were totally smart enough to learn how to figure it out, but we weren't paying attention. That guy is a multimillionaire now, of course. Right? Think about it. He got hundreds of these crypto ATMs. You go there and you can convert your money on the spot without even basically putting it in your checking account almost. Or if it is in your checking account and it's converted from exchange, you know, he's got these crypto ATMs. So I'm trying to say that there's a difference between ignorance and stupidity in a bubble. And sometimes that ignorance can help you in the future. A lot of things come back around. And sometimes, I don't know why society is it okay now, but don't let anybody let them dumb you down. You have to water down your intelligence to match somebody's stupidity. Now, you don't have to be condescending, but sometimes people will say you're condescending if they don't understand you. Like, they feel like you're talking over them because they're feeling bad about something they didn't invest in themselves. And I'm not talking about being degreed or using big words. I'm talking about they're feeling bad about not investing in themselves to follow with their statement. So they make a real blanket statement like the U.S. economy is not worth nothing and blah, blah, blah. All these companies are blah, blah, blah. Or the world is flat, right? Conspiracy theory statement, maybe. And some conspiracy all have bases because they all clothed in mythology and stuff like that. Have some bases. But anybody that's traveled the world or been up in a plane or ever shot a gun or a rifle or ever been above 10,000 feet know the circumference of the earth is not flat. Right? So, but some people find validation in this process. And these are the same people that will find validation when you're sitting there saying you want to build an app. They can't monetize it in their mind, right? These are the same people that may say that you know, somebody already built that. You know, these are the same type of people. So what I want to convey to you is that everything comes back around. The economy in itself even has cycles. So do people. People have cycles, right? The innovators have cycles, right? So I was looking at this TED talk with this gentleman. He came from a hedge fund or venture cap group, and he invested in thousands of companies over the years, and he did some research. I'm sorry I can't remember the gentleman's name at this time, but he did all this research about what made companies successful, small startups, like what made them successful. What's the difference in DNA in a company made it successful? You know, is it the people? Is it the finances? Is it the idea? Is it, you know, the timing? he tried to quantify these things, right? You would think he wanted to know the number one reason. You would think the most important reason to make a company successful would be perhaps the idea, you know? If you got a hellified idea, you're going to make money, right? Or you'd be like, where's the people? Because without the people, the idea can't even get done. You know, people matter a lot, you know. And then you think, okay, maybe it's all these other things. Well, according to his research, the number one thing, once you kind of level out the rest of the things, let's just say all these other things are equal besides this one thing. He said it was timing. Sat back on that, thought about that. If you really look at the true successful companies and startups in the world, timing played a huge factor. Let's just go to one that everybody I know is listening to this radio show looks at every day, Google. Google created a search algorithm that searched metadata differently in the way it pulled search. And it was a timing moment where Yahoo was the biggest search engine out there. They were the biggest. And they had an opportunity to buy Google. And they underbid it like super low. They're like, we the best. They had a Mr. Wonderful idea about it. You're going to crush you like a roach. And you know, and that's that. People are in their bubbles, financially as well, generationally. A baby boomer or a super baby boomer bubble would be different from a Generation Xer and then also a millennials bubble, right? Millennials aren't like valuing anything the same that a Generation Xer would or a baby boomer would as a group, you know? They're buying less vehicles. They aren't owning as much houses and things like that. They want to do things when they want to do it, and they want to be happy with their job, right? A Generation Xer can go between both worlds. And a baby boomer, you know, they're not trying to learn nothing new. So this gentleman also said, later on, most of the economy is built around people with high school diplomas or less. He said, this is pretty much only 30% of Americans have a formal college degree of any sort. That means, you know, 70% of the economy is based on people with high school diplomas or less. And then 50% of the economy is built around manual labor, pretty much. People working in retail, transportation, type jobs, physical labor, right? And there's something about to happen faster than we want to think. We keep talking about retraining people to, you know, get these other jobs, like be caught up in technology, right? But a lot of people, depending on their age, don't want to learn new technology, and we're not good at training new people. I'm not going to say all people, because that would be an ignorant statement, but some people are resistant to change, right? So the reality is we won't be able to train everyone for new technology. But it's interesting to me, when he made that statement, a lot of people will change for fun technology, like using that app to make themselves look older, right? People that I know that never used phones before messing around with that app, right? That's interesting to me. That's the kind of simple-minded things now that we do when we don't want to do it. But for ourselves, when it comes to re-educating ourselves, you know, to do some things, it won't matter. Everybody doesn't have to learn how to code. That's ridiculous. There will always be a need, far as we know, for some type of technical know-how to take care of a machine, even when artificial intelligence comes along. Artificial intelligence across the spectrum of things will affect a lot of us. And artificial intelligence, ladies and gentlemen, is already here in some form. Your Alexa, your Siri is learning right now every day on the phone. Your Bixby is learning every day, right? Your Autotype is learning every second. So what you have to decide is, in the new gig economy, where is your value? Because what you need to know is, because most of the economy, what they're not paying attention to, which he didn't even point out, is that if 50% of the population is, you know, let's just say a certain baby boomers are retiring and retired, what happened, they may be super resistant to the new future technologies, right? But here's one thing. They got money, right? They're going to be steady in their money, and they're going to want to do things the old way to a point. But they're always going to want a gatekeeper to do things a certain way, to go between worlds. And maybe you can find value there, converting, you know, some of the things that they want to accomplish between worlds, between something more modern to get done, that they doing it more of a manual way. Maybe you can find an opportunity there as a consultant or an employee for them. It's a simple thing, you know, but it's a hard thing. So depending on where you are, you know, if you go to Cuba right now, you know, those cars are old as heck, you know, but it has a certain value. So if timing is the most important thing, it's better to be ahead. But if timing is the most important thing for your opportunities, how do you find value in the process of figuring out what your value is to completing your goal of owning some type of technological advancement or being a part of, finding your place in it? You know, maybe you don't know anything about social media. Maybe you don't know anything about coding. I swear to you, that is not as relevant as the wisdom you bring from knowing about 25 years worth how the economy works, how it really works, or 30 years how architecture works, or 15 years how road construction is work, or 10 years of how truck driving works, or 15 years of teaching works. Find your technical you, your technical partner, your innovative person. Find someone that can help you find your value. There's a I'm not going to say necessarily a younger version of you, but there's a person that necessarily can help you find your new opportunity in this gig economy in the future. And if you want to build an app, you truly want to build one, then leave me a message, ask me a question, I'll respond back, and I swear to you, I'll be happy to share anything I know. And if I don't know it, I'm going to tell you where the rawest form where you can find it out. And if I'm not the one to help you, you're going to have to search around and reach around. You're going to have to start school again, ladies and gentlemen. Because I know a lot of you every day are sitting out there thinking, wow, you know, I got a piece of technology I want to build. And it doesn't have to be on the phone. It could be a gadget. Those are form of technologies. Dr. Rashar told us the other day she built a valve, basically, that keeps our system in a shower from cotton coal, and we can also use this valve also to help manage the entire house to fluctuate and control the systems in the house. House is pressurized. A lot of people don't know their house is pressurized, but it is. So I say that to say that I want to thank you for your time and thank you for your patience. And as usual, I want to thank you guys for fitting me in. And we'll be back next week. Take care.
After these messages, he's gonna be right back.